Pleasure to be here at this wonderful occasion. So, the talk I'd like to present is entitled Comments on Born-Infeld Theory, but what this really is World Volume Theories of D-Brains. So that would be a better title. I'm looking for a pointer. Is there a pointer? Or maybe this thing. The focus okay? So, what I don't have any startling results here, so this will be basically a review. And what I will do is I will first discuss the case of a single BPS D-brain, discuss the bosonic sector and then the supersymmetrization when you're dealing with a D-brain in type 2 superstring theory, discuss the issue of gauge fixing, and show you a fairly explicit formula in the case of the U1 theory. Then I will turn to non-abelian generalizations, the theory associated with multiple coincident D-brains. We'll focus on the bosonic Chern-Simons term, and then I'll discuss the problem of supersymmetrization and make a few concluding remarks. Here I've listed a few of the important references. It's a vast subject, and there are hundreds of references. But this one is a review of the subject that was written about a year and a half ago by Arkady Zeitlin. Here's some work I did with Aganagic and Popescu, which is already 4 years old, and which I will mention again. I will remind you of the remarkable result that Rob Myers found a little over a year ago. Then I will discuss some recent work by Bergsoft, Derue, and Severin on trying to construct the non-abelian supersymmetric theory. I won't be using this directly very much, but there's a recent paper by Krauss and Larson on the use of background string field theory for computing Born-Infeld actions and related things, which I found very helpful. So let me talk about a single BPS D-brain. So I remind you that D-brains are surfaces on which open strings can end. And that being the case, their dynamics is described by open string field theory, for example, of the type formulated by Witten in 1986. However, this action, as you know, is sometimes difficult to work with. And so it can be useful to consider the low energy effective action that would be obtained in principle by integrating out all the massive modes and only keeping the massless super Maxwell multiplet. Now, that's of course too hard, but the problem becomes tractable if one only keeps terms in which the fields are slowly varying compared to the string scale, keeping field strengths but not their derivatives. So this is a restriction on the size, of the variation of the field strengths, but there's no restriction on the size of the field strengths themselves. They can be large or comparable to the string scale, and the only limitation there is that in the case of very large electric fields, there can be a critical value where the formula becomes ill-defined. In the case of type 2 superstrings, the effective action is written as the sum of two terms, a Born-Infeld term and a Chern-Simons term. And as many people have realized, these two terms have a nice interpretation, in particular in the boundary state formalism, namely the Dirac-Born-Infeld term can be viewed as originating from the NSNS sector of the closed string and the Chern-Simons term from the RR sector. So let me now turn to the problem of a single D-brain. So one n equal 1 meaning one D-brain, which is a U1 gauge theory. And in this case, if we start by ignoring Fermi fields and taking a flat 10-dimensional background, the action for such a D9 brain has this form. Here at T9 is the tension of the 9 brain, and G alpha beta is the pullback of the flat 10-dimensional spacetime metric to the world volume through the embedding functions x. I've specialized to the case here of the 9 brain, but in a moment I'll indicate how to be more general. So just to establish notation, I use sigma alpha for the world volume coordinates, where in general alpha goes from 0 to p, although in this case I've set p equal to 9. And x mu are the embedding functions, so mu is the space-time label that goes from 0 to 9. And as is quite manifest, this action has world volume diffeomorphism invariance. So, and there's a natural gauge choice that one can make, which is called static gauge. And so in static gauge, what one does is to identify the first p plus 1 components of the embedding functions x with the world volume coordinates. So in the special case of the 9 brain, the effect of that is very simple. And what one ends up with is just the original Born-Enfeld theory, which is just the determinant of the unit matrix, or the Lorentz matrix, and the U1 field strength. So this formula was actually derived for bosonic string theory. I think it was done first by Fradkin and Saitlin in the mid-80s. And they did it by computing a path integral, which can be interpreted as corresponding to a disk partition function. They talked the language of sigma models. The modern version of that is to talk about boundary string field theory, which is essentially the same thing, I believe. So this was subsequently generalized by them and others, by Saitlin and others, to the case of the superstring. Now, if you have p less than 9, there is a simple rule for how to deduce that from the case of the 9 brain. One is to implement t-duality, the fact that under a t-duality, wrapped d-brain dimensions become unwrapped ones, and vice versa. And the result that one obtains that way at low energies, where one drops the contributions of winding modes, is this in agreement with the result that you would get from dimensional reduction. And so you can read it off directly from this just by dimensional reduction. And so what one is doing is now splitting the indices into two, namely those that are along the brain and those that are perpendicular to the brain. So xi are the embedding functions that describe the excitations transverse to the d-brain. These world volume scalars can be regarded as Goldstone bosons associated to broken translational symmetries. A special case of this formula, which was pointed out quite a few years ago by Bacchus, is that if you just specialize to the case of the d0 brain, you get this formula, which is precisely the Lagrangian for a massless relativistic point particle. I have to be. Okay. Now, the Chern-Simons term was, I believe, discussed first by Michael Douglas in the presence of Ramon background fields, and is a very concise formula that he found. This has generalizations, which I won't go into, but some of which I will go into later, in which C represents a formal sum of Ramon n-form fields. So the sum goes over even values of n in the 2b case and odd values of n in the 2k case. And so this is a formal sum of differential forms of different order, and you're instructed to pick out the p plus 1 form to get the appropriate expression. Let me just make a side remark here, and that having these Born-Enfeld theories for the effective action of open strings, it's intriguing to wonder whether there might be something analogous for closed strings. So, of course, there's no such formula known. What one would be looking for is a formula that sums up the higher curvature terms in the low energy effective action of the supergravity. There was a paper quite a few years ago which proposed some formula of the structure, the determinant of the metric plus the curvature. But it was written by someone I've never heard of before or since, and it didn't have much justification, but I found it quite intriguing nonetheless. So I wish I knew how to go about this. So let me return to things that are understood. So in the cases which are supersymmetric, where the brain saturates some BPS bound, the inclusion of world volume fermions results in a supersymmetric D-brain action. And I worked on this with Agan Agic and Popescu. And it was independently studied by Sederwall et al. And Bergsoff and Townsend at about the same time. So the idea is to embed the brain into superspace. So in addition to X, you have the two thetas, since which are Majorana-Weyl spinners, representing n equal 2 superspace in 10 dimensions. So in this way, one can realize global n equal 2 d equal 10 supersymmetry in a very simple way. This is just as a global symmetry. These are the standard transformations. And the idea basically is to construct the action out of supersymmetric invariants, so such as this object here and just the derivative of theta. Now, the only problem with doing this is that the thetas give twice the desired number of fermions. And so to end up with the theory that one wants, one half of them have to be somehow eliminated. And this is done by incorporating a local fermionic symmetry called kappa symmetry. So the requirements of global supersymmetry and local kappa symmetry turn out to completely determine the action at this order in derivatives, where we don't have derivatives of field strength. And the result is essentially the Born-Infeld action I described, except I have to explain what G and F are. T is the tension of the P-brain. And then there's a Chern-Simons term involving the tension times some P plus 1 form. The only ambiguity is whether you have a plus or minus sign here, and that's a question of whether you're just discussing a D-brain or an anti-D-brain. So the G that was in the Born-Infeld term is the pullback of the supersymmetric object pi that we had on the previous transparency, so this is manifestly supersymmetric. The F has, you can add a background NS2 form to it in the usual manner, but to satisfy all this kappa symmetry and the global supersymmetry, one needs an additional piece, which is a 2-form made out of the Fermi fields. And in the case of the 2A theory, where you combine the two thetas into a single Majorana theta, you can write it in this form. So that makes this term supersymmetric when the gauge field transforms under the global supersymmetry in an appropriate manner. Now, for constant Ramon background fields, the Chern-Simons term is closed, but there is an additional piece involving the thetas that contribute. So the omega that shows up in the formula does have an exterior derivative, and it's easiest to write the formula by specifying this P plus 2 form. And it's given by some characteristic class, more or less, and has a similar structure to what we were describing before, except now we have this fancy F in the exponent, and then some function of these supersymmetric invariants, which I haven't bothered to write out here. So there's a definite formula that was found. So that describes the supersymmetric U1 D-brain exact at this order in the low energy expansion. So let me now turn to the issue of gauge fixing. And if we specialize to the case of the 9-brain, which is quite general since, as I've already mentioned, the lower ones can be deduced by dimensional reduction, we can again choose static gauge. And so the local diffeomorphism symmetry is used to identify the embedding functions with the world volume coordinates. And again, we need to use the local kappa symmetry to eliminate half of the theta coordinates. And so a simple choice that preserves the manifest 10-dimensional covariance is to simply set one of the two Majorana-Weyl spinners equal to 0. This turns out to be a consistent thing to do. And it's nice because it preserves the manifest 10-dimensional Lorentz invariance. And this has the remarkable consequence of completely eliminating the Chern-Simons term from the gauge-fixed action. This is in the absence of background Ramon-Ramon fields. So if we rename the remaining theta lambda and set 2 pi alpha prime equal to 1, the resulting expression is this thing, which is not terribly complicated. And this, I think, is an interesting formula. because at least if you expand it out in dimension, various dimension operators, it contains as a free theory the n equal 1 d equal 10 super Maxwell theory, supplemented by higher derivative interaction terms. And it's interesting and far from obvious that this thing has not only the 16 linearly realized supersymmetries of the free theory, which are preserved in this complicated formula, but in addition, there are 16 additional nonlinearly realized supersymmetries. So you can see the full 32 supersymmetries of the background theory. And the appearance of this kind of structure with a determinant involving the Fermi fields is reminiscent of the old Volkov-Akilov action going back to 1972 for nonlinearly realized supersymmetry in terms of Fermi fields. And so what this means is that lambda can be interpreted as the Goldstone field for the 16 broken supersymmetries. And so that's why one sees that structure. So altogether, what we have, if we take this formula and dimensionally reduce it down to a P-brain action, is that we have 16 supersymmetries and P plus 1 translation symmetries that are linearly realized. And then there are 16 more supersymmetries and 9 minus P translation symmetries that are nonlinearly realized and correspond to Goldstone modes on the world volume. So that's the story of a single supersymmetric D brain. There are generalizations that other authors have discussed to add more dependence on the background fields. The form has become, in my view, a little less transparent because you have a whole superfield structure to describe the background fields, and the superfield structure of these high-dimension superspaces is a rather technical subject. So for that reason, I prefer to just focus on simple backgrounds. So let's discuss non-abelian generalizations. So we, as you know, the world volume theory of n-coincident d-brains should be a UN gauge theory. And as such, it should be some sort of non-abelian generalizations of the formulas that I've been discussing. However, the explicit construction of such an action is a difficult problem. It's been studied extensively. Much is known about it, but it's certainly not fully formulated. In 1997, Arkady-Zeitlin proposed a specific recipe for generalizing to the non-abelian case. And his proposal was basically to take the abelian formulas, but replace the fields by n by n matrices, and then take a trace of the whole thing. But the problem is that there are ordering ambiguities in doing that. So he proposed what he called a symmetrized trace prescription, which is to average over all possible different orderings whenever there's an ambiguity in the order in which matrices should be multiplied. So for example, if we start with just this kind of a formula and expand it out in powers of f, where the f squared means this and so forth, we can then extend to the non-abelian case by replacing f by a Hermitian n by n matrix, and then Zeitlin's proposal would be to take the trace of each term in this expansion and resolve the ordering ambiguities by averaging over all possible choices. Now, this works up to a certain order, but studies by Hashimoto and Taylor and others suggest that this is a correct rule only through terms of order f to the fourth, and that at higher orders, it isn't exactly right. So let me now turn to the bosonic piece of the Chern-Simons term when you have Ramon-Ramon backgrounds. And here there was this very startling discovery by Rob Myers a little over a year ago, where he discovered an interesting part of the answer by exploring consistency with T-duality. So he started right in the static gauge, threw away all fermions, focused on the dependence on the bosonic fields A and X, which is all you have when you throw away fermions and go to static gauge. But each of these is now our n by n matrices. And he included the dependence on background B and C fields. So what he found for the Chern-Simons term that he found was compatible with T-duality was a formula which looks deceptively simple, but it's a subtle formula, and the meaning of the notation requires some explanation. So first of all, the expression C here means the sum of differential forms for the Ramon-Ramon fields just as before, I forgot to write the fact that one extracts the p plus 1 form piece of this at the end. So there should be a subpiece of 1 right there. P of dot, dot, dot means the pullback to the world volume, which is non-trivial. B and C are bulk fields, after all, and so they have to be pulled back to the world volume using the embedding functions. The x's here refer to the 9 minus p scalars describing the transverse excitations of the d-brains, which are now n by n matrices. And this operator that appears in the exponent is some operator that maps n-forms into n minus 2 forms. So just to, rather than giving a general definition, just illustrate how it works. When it acts, for example, on a Ramon-Ramon 2 form, it contracts two of the x's into the two indices. And since C is antisymmetric, that just picks out the commutator. So you see such a term would not be present in the abelian case. However, that's not the whole story. When you have some function like the background fields that depend both on the coordinates along the brain and those transverse to the brains, the coordinates transverse to the brain have to be replaced by these n by n matrices. So you need some rule for substituting the bulk transverse coordinates x by these matrices x. And this, again, requires an ordering prescription, since for different components they don't commute. So the proposed formula that Myers found is given by this expression here. So this implies a definite way of resolving the ordering ambiguities. Anyway, a crucial feature of Myers' formula is that multiple d-brain systems can be sources of higher d-brain charge as well as lower d-brain charge, since all the Ramon-Ramon fields appear. So this is to be contrasted with the abelian case, where when you took this expression that you have in the abelian theory, it only depended on the p plus 1 Ramon form and the lower ones. In this formula, because of this e to the phi phi thing that we had, the higher ones enter as well. And this turns out to have some very interesting dynamical consequences, something that Myers called the dielectric effect. So for example, if there's a background Ramon-Ramon field strength, this can cause the brain to expand in new directions. So for example, a system of ND0 brains in the presence of an electric Ramon 4-form flux becomes a fuzzy 2-sphere. And for large n, this describes an ordinary 2-sphere with radius proportional to n. And this can be interpreted as a spherical D2 brain. So what started out as a bunch of D0 brains becomes a spherical D2 brain with ND0 brains bound to it. So this Myers effect has entered into many of the talks at this meeting and is relevant to the appearance of what are called giant gravitons on the ADS side of the ADS-EFT correspondence, as was first discussed by these people. So let me now turn to the issue of supersymmetrization. So we want to add the Fermi fields into the story. So let me just remind you of the rationale for Saitlin's symmetrized trace prescription. I didn't emphasize it, but this was used in Myers' formula too. And that is that in the non-abelian physics, a field strength commutator is equivalent to a commutator of covariant derivatives acting on a field strength. And this demonstrates a specific ambiguity in what one means by an expansion in derivatives. So the idea of the Born-Infeld theory is that you keep dependence on field strength and not on derivatives of field strength. So the question arises, should terms like this be kept or not? Because whether they involve derivatives or not depends which side of the equation you look at. So how am I doing on time? It's hard to see. 2 minutes? So this might be resolved by requiring that the action have all the desired symmetries, such as supersymmetry, Kappa symmetry, et cetera. So I have to speed up a little bit. So anyway, one way of studying this problem was explored by Bergshoff, DeRue, and Severin. And what they did was to go directly to a static gauge for the x's, but to keep all of the thetas. So that being the case, one still needs the local kappa symmetries to get rid of half of the thetas, except that the thetas are now n by n matrices. So they needed a scheme in which the local kappa symmetry was an n by n matrix symmetry. And it's not obvious to me a priori whether this is something that's going to work or not, but they did some iterative analysis and in expanding into higher dimension terms and found that it worked as far as they went, so it seems like it makes sense. And so they were able to determine terms of up these terms, terms of this structure in the Chern-Simons theory, Chern-Simons term, and terms of this structure here in the Dirac-Born-Infeld theory, and achieved consistency with all the requirements up to that order. So that seems to suggest that this could, in principle, be pushed arbitrarily far. They then went to a gauge where, again, theta 2 is said to equal to 0. And as in the abelian case, they found that the Chern-Simons term does not contribute in this gauge. And they also observed that certain terms involving the Fermi fields cannot be expressed in terms of symmetrized traces. So the that, again, seems to be failing. Now, this iterative analysis, of course, is very technically difficult and can't be pushed much further. So it'd be desirable to have explicit results, exact results that one could use to explore non-abelian generalizations of things such as the Myers effect in the presence of the Fermi fields. So one would like to be able to study classical solutions that describe various sorts of solitons, brain configurations, and so forth. So one would like to find a method of doing more. So let me conclude. D-brain world volume actions are always given as a sum of Dirac-Born-Infeld and Chern-Simons terms, and each term has lots of interesting physical information. A powerful approach that I didn't really discuss is the boundary string field theory, or background independent string field theory approach, which is very nicely explained in the recent paper of Krauss and Larson. And this provides a logical basis for deriving D-brain effective actions in terms of disk partition functions with appropriate boundary conditions, boundary interactions. This can also be used to study unstable D-brain systems, a subject discussed by many of the other speakers, which I haven't mentioned so far. And it also provides a promising approach for formulating the problem of non-abelian Born-Infeld that I think deserves further study. There is an explicit formula as a path integral, but whether that's amenable to analytic evaluation is rather doubtful. So that's all I have to say on the subject.
Questions?
In the abelian case, what the DBI action does is to tell us how to describe the system when the electromagnetic field is perhaps large but slowly varying. But it's less clear what situation we want to describe in the non-abelian case.
I agree with that comment.
Well, if there are no more questions, let's thank the speaker. Okay.